Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a local institution that has served Chicago's children for well over a century. The need is constant, but the funding is inconsistent. That's the challenge facing Susanna Wickham, the new president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago. I'm WBBM Noon Business Hour host Rob Hart, and we talk about the Boys and Girls Clubs and the state of local philanthropy on this weekend's edition of At Issue.
Thank you for joining us today on At Issue.
Thank you, Rob.
And this is your new job, and I think you've had the good fortune to run organizations that represent people and entities that you can't say no to them, because now it's kids at the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago, and before that, it was puppies and kittens at Paws.
That's how you and I met.
Yeah. How do you wrangle such a gig where everything is just puppies, kittens, and kids all the time?
Well, I guess I always follow my passions, and I'm very heart-led as a person. And when the opportunity came up for the Boys and Girls Clubs, I thought about the kids in my life. I'm not a mother. I don't have kids of my own, but I'm the adult in many kids' lives, nieces, nephews, godchildren, just a huge group of kids that I'm very involved with. And so this really speaks to me because I see the influence that a non-parental adult can have on a kid.
Now, before we talk about your new responsibility at the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago, let's talk a little bit about your old job at Paws and specifically the state of philanthropy in the city. You know, through your own observations and trying to raise funds for Paws and now trying to get people to donate to Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago. You know, in your experience, what's the largest source of philanthropic giving in the city? Is it from families, individual donors? Is it from foundations? Or is it from corporate philanthropy?
Yeah, I would say individual giving and especially among, well, there are a couple of categories because I think you have the major givers who give, the family foundations that make very large gifts. And those are some of the most philanthropic names in Chicago. But then Chicago as a whole has a lot of people who are philanthropic and who might make smaller gifts throughout the year to organizations they care about. And that's just as powerful. It's a lot more people giving smaller gifts, but it makes a huge impact.
And in general, is it easier now today as a small donor or as an individual to donate to an organization, whether it's Paws or Boys and Girls Clubs or any organization that they feel is very important to them? Is it easier now because of that online component that you can just, you see something, it touches you, you feel very strongly about it, and then you can do something about it financially as opposed to waiting for the corporate fund drive or filling out a form or tearing a coupon?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that especially with social media, people are connected to causes and they follow things they care about and they see content from their friends and they may decide to get involved. And one of the big things I'm focused on at the Boys and Girls Clubs is we have really wonderful supporters. Our boards are some of the most philanthropic people in Chicago. Many of the sports teams, the corporations are really largely behind us. But one of the challenges we have as an organization is that when you deal with kids, you have to be really careful about who you let in the door, as opposed to animals where there's thousands of people coming in every month interested in adoption. So you build a database more easily when you're dealing with animals because it's very easy to let people in and to interact. With kids, you have to be very protective. All of our staff goes through background checks, and people who want to come through the building go through background checks. And so that creates a barrier, and it becomes harder to get that grassroots donor involved. And that's one of the things I'm really working on. Because people have said to me, of course, I've heard of the Boys and Girls Clubs. You know, it's an iconic name. It's been in Chicago for more than 100 years. But because it's not as easy to walk in the door and see what's happening, they don't know what do the Boys and Girls Club do and how can I support and how can I get involved. So that's something you'll be hearing a lot about if I have anything to say about it.
Well, I think anybody who has served as a parental volunteer, whether it's for a school or an organization in their lives, I mean, they we're all familiar with that background check process. And it's also heartbreaking that you have to go through that process exists in the first place because so many people throughout history have taken advantage of that trust that some kids place in adults.
That's absolutely right. And I think, you know, as I've been onboarded in this role, one of the words I hear all the time is safety. And we actually have someone whose job is dedicated to safety in our organization. And that means, you know, every Monday morning when we have our senior leadership meeting, we get a report on if a kid fell and scraped their head, if anything that could have happened that we need to know as an organization presents a risk to the kids that we're caring for that we may need to address. It's the number one thing we talk about every day.
I was going to say that because my children, you know, they go to summer camps and two of them just came back from a sleepaway camp. And as a parent, you're always, it's in the back of your mind. There's that little sense of anxiety is like, are they going to be okay here mm-hmm. when I put my children in the care of other people? And I know they've been trained. I know this is a trusted organization, but are they going to come back with a cast or a sling or a scraped knee or something like that? When you are assessing risk for programs that the Boys and Girls Clubs conduct, and keep in mind, you know, keeping in mind that you're brand new in this job.
Yeah.
But, you know, making sure that just kids, when you drop them off, that they're going to be okay when you pick them up. So
Tons of protocols.
Yeah.
Tons of protocols. Just even the way they check in. So for instance, one of the reasons it's expensive to do what we do and the reason we need funding is because we have ratios of how many adults, paid staff have to be there for every child. That's a huge protocol for safety because if you have too many kids, then you can't possibly monitor them at all times. Our ratio is 15 kids to one adult. And that is a capacity limit for our programs that as we fundraise more, we'll be able to address and add more kids.
So when you came into the Boys and Girls Clubs, you had a very successful tenure at PAWS. And what was it about your tenure at PAWS that you felt you could leverage that into your current position with the Boys and Girls Clubs?
Yeah, I think I'm a community builder. That's what I've done in every role that I've had. And before working in nonprofit, I had a media career. I was the editor-in-chief and publisher of Chicago Magazine, most recently before PAWS. And that's about getting your message out to a large audience and getting them engaged in what you're doing and making them care enough to subscribe or to open your emails. And actually, there's a lot of overlap with nonprofit because whatever you're doing is only as successful as the number of people that you can get to care about it. And the more people who are engaged in your stories and who want to participate and get involved, the greater reach you can have. And so that's what I focused on at PAWS and what I'm really focusing on at the Boys and Girls Clubs.
And then when you walked into the Boys and Girls Clubs, I think, you know, when people said, we want to bring you in, what did you see as issue number one to you?
That's a big one. So the biggest thing is that there has been a huge loss of government grant funding. And for us, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago, that represents about 30% of our budget. It started to go away last year. It's not all tied to the current administration. But generally, there is a lot less government funding for programs like ours. And what that means is I have to replace that government funding if I want to be as effective or more with private donors. So really looking at the support that we get, one of the challenges that we have is we have this wonderful, you know, wonderful board of directors, wonderful women's board. They're very networked. They're very well known in Chicago. So we have these phenomenal events that raise a lot of money. But the challenge with event revenue is then you might go months without seeing the revenue. Then you have an event and it all comes in at once. And then you go another few months and there's another event. And so as you're looking at just your operation and your ability to fund things and determine, can we add another staff position that can run our STEM program for the boys and girls? Well, you don't know if you can run it until you have that event. And then it's not as sustainable as creating that grassroots continual fundraising. And that's something that we need to work on. And in fact, you'll probably in the next couple of weeks, if you're paying attention to us and what we do, I would tell people to go to bgcc.org, so Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago.org, and sign up to receive our information. But, you know, a campaign that I'm working on right now is it costs us about $10 a day per kid to provide them with after-school programming. And I should mention, a lot of people say, what do the Boys and Girls Clubs do? So we have 8 buildings in Chicago spread throughout various, you know, north side, west side, south side. And kids can go there after school and they receive a healthy meal. They receive all sorts of mentorship, help with their homework is how they begin, and then all sorts of sports activities. There are character and leadership program pillars. We have swim lessons, indoor pools. We have all these things that the kids can do, and the programming varies throughout the year, but it's all in the realm of their social and emotional development, their physical health and well-being. And then, of course, their character building and making them into great citizens of Chicago. And so Boys and Girls Clubs are these places where kids can go, and they may otherwise have nowhere to go after school. They might not have a parent at home. Maybe they have a single parent who's working 2 jobs. Maybe there isn't dinner waiting for them at home, and they'll get it at our club, and they'll get the help and the homework help and the support that they need. So as I look at it, it costs us about $10 a day per kid to provide this service. Because as I mentioned, we have to have 1 staff person for every 15 kids. We have these buildings. Our biggest expense are our facilities, because the maintenance, you know, they occasionally need new roofs and new windows and things that are expensive. And so we're going to do a campaign, a back to school campaign, where we ask donors to give us $10 to fund a kid's experience for 1 day at the clubs. Those are the kinds of things that, you know, we want to tell people, here's what we do, here's how we do it, and here's how you can help, you know, instead of Starbucks today.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart, and we're talking with Susanna Wickham, president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago. You touched on the loss in grant funding and government grant funding. Is this state support, city support? Does it come from Washington, or is it all 3?
Yeah, so largely, a lot of the funding is federal, but passes through the state. So you're dealing with both. And it comes in a lot of different categories. One of the ones that we're most worried about right now is our food program, which is federal, but passes through the state. It allows us to give a meal and 2 snacks to every kid that comes through our program. And we don't know if it's going to be renewed past the end of September. So we're awaiting word. And with the loss of grants that we've had over the last year, again, this is an operational challenge for a nonprofit organization, but you spend the money typically and it is paid back in arrears as you turn in your receipts and you turn in the evidence that you've spent the money. And so you are out a lot of money before you realize that it may not be renewed. It's been very challenging, I think, for our team to budget. And so that's why one of the big things that I'm working on is figuring out, you know, what are the ways that we can create more sustainable funding that is predictable and repeatable month after month, so that we're not so dependent on events or on grants that we may or may not continue to get.
It's interesting you talk about the fundraising events and that eventually you can't plan for how much you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And then it can be an inconsistent source of funding. And this is something that we've talked about on the Noon Business Hour quite a bit, which is everybody gives at the end of the year.
Yes.
That's the tradition. You write the checks to charity or whatever organization that is nearest to you at the end of the year. And then the organizations have to find a way to spend that down. And you get to June or July and you're wondering, well, what are you going to do until what?
Until December. That's exactly right.
December.
That's exactly right. Unless you're supremely well-funded, which most nonprofits aren't. You really find yourself making decisions based on what you think will come in. And in many cases, you might get 40% of your funding in November, December, that time period. And then, of course, for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago, our fiscal year started July 1st, and our events happen, you know, March, May and June. And so we really pack our events in at the end of the fiscal year. And I don't think that's by design. It's happenstance that that's just the way it's built, which means we start the year in a deficit. And it does create a challenging budgetary situation that I'm working on, you know, the best partnerships to create, the best ideas, and how to reach people throughout Chicago and say, you know, this is investing in the future of Chicago. We want kids to have a place to go after school, especially because what I've observed is the kids who are there really want to be there. And they're good kids. They are, they're sweet and they're funny. And many of them are ambitious. They want to go to college. You know, they what's fascinating is how many of the people who work at our clubs actually were club kids at one point. Many of our club directors at the eight clubs came through the program and then came back as adults and now work there. And so we're giving the kids in our program examples of, you know, here are some of the careers that you can have. And we bring people in from all over the city. Our board chair, who's the person I report to and is really wonderful, is the CEO of Nuveen. You've probably seen the Nuveen signs yep. at mm-hmm. Wrigley Field. And, you know, they hosted a bunch of our of the kids from one of our clubs a couple of weeks ago at the Nuveen building, and they gave them a whole career discussion and activities all day that would just open their eyes to, you know, here's some of the things that you could be someday. And it was fun because I was there for the beginning of it, and they walked onto the 34th floor, I think we were on, and the kids were so cute. They were like, I can't look out the window. This is so high up. This is so tall. And they were seeing views of the city they've never seen before. And so you want to inspire kids and just show them what's possible. And that's what we're doing.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that really is that is a very interesting story, because if you live in the neighborhoods around downtown Chicago and or you're on the south side or the west side or the northwest side, and you look off in the distance and you see the skyscrapers of downtown.
Yeah.
And if you don't work there and if you've never been there, it may seem like the Emerald City from the Wizard of Oz.
Right.
So even going into a downtown skyscraper that for many people represents drudgery. If you're going into a tall building in downtown,
we're so spoiled.
You're fantasizing that we think about yeah. going on vacation somewhere.
Right.
But if you have seen these buildings off in the distance and they just represent a dream, then that's got to be a transformative experience.
And can you see yourself within that setting? And are the people welcoming? And do they answer your questions? I work out of one of our clubs is the James Jordan Club, which is near United Center, named after Michael Jordan's dad. It was built in the 90s, the heyday. And that's the one where we have our executive offices. And I try to walk around every day and just kind of say hi to the kids. And I see the little girls. One of them, when I introduced myself and said, you know, I'm the new CEO, she said, that means you're the boss. And another little girl said, slay. So I think I'm conscious that they're even looking at me as a female CEO and thinking to themselves, you know, this is a career path. And so what's really cool is the people who give experiences to the kids. Today, you know, the Blackhawks are a big partner. And today, as I was leaving to come here, we had a floor hockey clinic. And so they teach the kids at our clubs floor hockey to get them engaged in the sport of hockey. And that's just one more fun thing that they get to do that burns off a lot of energy and gives, you know, transforms their experience at the club. So it's not the same thing day after day.
It's an academic exercise, as you talk about, you know, you show up and they help you with your homework. But there are also academic programs. There are STEM programs. There are career programs, but there's also a physical fitness component to it
yeah.
as well. So do you see a Boys and Girls Clubs facility? Is it a community center? Is it a Park District field house? I mean, how do you view these Boys and Girls Clubs facilities now that you've seen them?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I'm still working on how do I articulate what we do in a way that that people can really relate to and understand. And I think what we are is we're not home and we're not school. We're the special place for the kids where they get to explore all kinds of interests and they get to be with really supportive and caring people. And it's safe because safety is such a priority for us. They don't have to think about their safety when they're in there, which might not be true in other times in their lives. And so it's really just that special, you know, it's kind of a second home and a second family, another community for the kids to be a part of. I do want to say one fun thing that, speaking of fun academic things, later this week, I'm going to go to our oldest club, which is in Little Village. And I believe it was built in 1902. And there's a partnership every Monday, Wednesday, Friday with the University of Chicago this summer where the kids are learning quantum computing. And I'm like, I need to see what they're doing because I don't think I understand that. And apparently,
so can I sit in the back of the classroom and just absorb all this?
I just
want
to learn something too. And what I've heard from our program team is that the University of Chicago folks who are leading this experience have said that they're amazed by how much the kids are retaining from class to class. And so, I mean, those are the kinds of things that can be dramatically life changing. But it's not just that; it's fun too. It's everything.
And when we talk about life-changing experiences, and this is something that I remember hearing over and over again as a reporter, is the thing that makes the biggest difference in someone's life is that someone says, you can do it too. Mm. And we take that for granted sometimes because not everybody hears that message. And maybe they're hearing it for the first time at a Boys and Girls Club.
I think that's so true. And it's interesting because I've noticed that the kids, as I chat with them, they're very chatty. And I wonder if it's because they're in this environment at the Boys and Girls Clubs where they are interacting with a lot of adults. And they're very quick to tell you what they're working on. They'll smile and wave as you walk in the room. I mean, I feel like this experience that they get at the Boys and Girls Clubs is really enriching for them and helps them develop that confidence because we're all interested in what they have to say.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. We are talking with Susanna Wickham, who is the new president and CEO of Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago. Now, what do you see, though, as the biggest challenge that the kids are facing today? Is it stuff that's happening outside of the club, or are these challenges that I like to call 21st century challenges? Is the biggest hurdle or challenge they're facing in their life, is that coming from the phone? Is that coming from a screen?
It's funny because people who walk through the clubs observe, like, wait a minute, there are all these kids and they're not tied to their screens. And it's because part of the experience is they put them away and we keep them engaged in other activities. And the teens can come and hang out in a teen lounge and plug into their phones. We really have different strategies for teenagers because when they're little, you know, many of them, most of our clubs are located where there's a school across the street and sometimes several schools within a few blocks. And so they can actually walk there after school with the help of their friends or adults. And so, but teenagers really have to come by choice because there are a lot of other things that they could be doing. And so we do a lot to engage teens. And one of the really cool things that I'm so excited about is we have a program in the spring called Youth of the Year. So we have our version of kind of like a student council where the kids become leaders and they are really active in the clubs, especially as they grow older. We have different engagement tools. And one of them is this Youth of the Year event. It's a culminating event every March. And we have kids make speeches to Chicago's business community at Navy Pier, 800 people in a room. I mean, imagine if you've been to that ballroom, it's quite intimidating. The lights are shining on you on that stage, and you have teenage kids presenting to a room full of some of the biggest names in Chicago, and they win college scholarships. And so the Youth of the Year winners, there's one at all of the eight clubs has a particular winner, and then they compete to be named the Youth of the Year for Chicago, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago. And then they go on to other competitions, the Midwest and then national as well. And it really is one of those resume building, college application building things. But it's just something that those kids within their clubs become kind of like celebrities and mentors to all the other kids. And every time I go to one of the clubs, people are like, oh, this was the youth of the year, or this person was the finalist from our club. And so it really is a thing that the teenagers who do go to the clubs, you see a level of ambition in them that is really heartwarming. So I would say when you ask what the toughest thing is, I think part of it is we want to make sure that we're reaching the kids that may have other things that are more compelling to them. We want to make sure we get more kids in our clubs to have this experience. And for us, that's purely a budgetary issue.
What is the value of mentorship in your experience? I mean, you've seen now over the course of 6 weeks the impact it has on the kids who go to the Boys and Girls Clubs facilities. But in the programming mix, the homework help, the STEM classes, the floor hockey lessons, just having a mentor show up and be a role model, you know, what kind of an impact does that have?
It's interesting because my experience it's pretty anecdotal right now. And I would say that people may think, oh, these kids may not have engaged parents. And I've actually seen a lot of really engaged parents. Most of the ones I've seen have been moms. So some of the kids may be coming from single parent households and maybe they don't have a father figure. So they're looking to that club director or the program director or someone, one of the adults at the club may fill another need for them. But it's beautiful actually to see our Youth of the Year winner from 5-6 months ago, this year's winner, came from our Little Village location. We have two locations in Little Village. He came from the True Value Club. And when I met his mom and he delivered the speech at one of our galas, you know, she had tears in her eyes and I spoke to her and her English is not great. You know, she's... he's probably the first generation that is fully English speaking and that is going to go to college. And, you know, I think for a kid who's growing up and looking to enter the professional world, I think the mentors that they get through the clubs may give them a window into something they wouldn't otherwise have experienced.
And then lastly, I mean, knowing the vetting process that exists for any organization that puts adults in close proximity with children, and we can talk about your experience at PAWS as well. As a volunteer, as an adult volunteer with an organization, we talk about the people that they're designed to serve. But I think it is if you volunteer, that can also be a profound experience for you as well.
Absolutely. And right now, I would say we're definitely looking for people with professional experience because with our budgetary constraints, you know, we don't have the ability to have the full staff that we would love to have. And so I recently recruited someone in who's a graphic design volunteer who's going to be able to help us. I spoke to a lawyer last week who's about to retire and looking to help us review our contracts. And those are the kinds of things we don't have a lawyer on staff and we wouldn't be able to afford to. So people who can volunteer any kind of expertise are really valuable to us. And then, of course, people who can teach things to the kids, people who can lead classes. There was something really powerful. We have a club in Bridgeport, and I love this club. It's like I would want to go there. It's such a fun place. But when I walked in for the first time, there were these four little girls that had to be 8 or 9 years old sitting around a round table, and they were knitting. And one of the staffers explained to me that we had a staff member who was very into knitting and led the formation of a knitting club. And then that person left a year ago. And now the little girls are teaching each other how to knit. And they were showing
That's
me.
It's terrific.
It's terrific. But it just shows you the power of having someone with an expertise and how they can come in and teach something. Whether it's some special kind of art that maybe our staff isn't equipped to teach, or music. There are lots of things that that we offer on some level, but you know, we're always looking for people who have expertise and would want to support us.
Susanna Wickham, thank you for joining us on this week's At Issue. If you want to listen to the program again, you can find the podcast at WBBMNewsRadio.com, the Odyssey app, and now the iHeartRadio app. I hope you join us next week for another edition of At Issue. Until then, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.